Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Joining us right now from Film Study Baltimore, he is Ken McCusick. Good morning to you, Ken.
Yeah, how you doing, Rob?
Doing well. Ken, before we found out all the information, you remember I was in love with Mike Green, in love with him. Then when I thought he was not going to be drafted by the Baltimore Ravens because of the off-the-field incident, then safety from Georgia became my guy. Starks. They got Starks in the second round. Then the first round, they come back and get the guy that I originally loved, Mike Green. It's almost like a draft Christmas for the Baltimore Ravens.
It was a pretty great first couple of rounds. I don't really love the Starks pick as much. We'll get into that, I'm sure. Let's talk about Green first.
Yeah.
Because that was the most exciting pick of the draft for me. In terms of, we exploded on the stream in terms of seeing that pick and being excited about it. He's got an unbelievable first step. That's the thing they don't measure for with edge rushers. He's bendy like a cartoon character when he's at his best. He really forces, because of his first step, for tackles to overset against him, which usually makes him very vulnerable back to the inside.
Okay.
So he kind of jabs outside. He'll spin back to the inside. And I'm sure Chuck Smith's going to give him other counters to work with as well to make his ability to get to the edge all that more effective. He does run himself out of a few plays. Part of the cost of doing business, I wouldn't be too concerned about him. His athleticism, by the way, says to me he might be a Sam linebacker, which is something the Ravens desperately need. But his pass rushing skills really are made to order to fight against one naked tackle as opposed to a tight end and a tackle.
Sounds almost like a Terrell Suggs type in terms of the flexibility to play both.
Well, Terrell Suggs is really a rush linebacker.
I'm not saying he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but Terrell Suggs was a guy that could drop back from time to time.
Sure. Well, let's hope for that. You want guys who can drop off the line of scrimmage because it improves your pass rush flexibility. So that's what you really wanted, even though Mike Green, you take him out of the pass rush, you wouldn't think that would ever help you. It might allow you to get a free run off the slot or whatever if you did. And so it's always something good to have. He's very much like Suggs in that he'll probably for most of his career line up opposite the tackle who is uncovered.
What about now? Let's get to Starks. we wanted safety depth anyway, next to Hamilton. How do you like him? Has he got closing speed? Can he make up for any mistakes made in the secondary? Get some picks. We haven't seen that in a while.
He's got ball skills. They've been apparent, and a lot of his highlights involve really good ball tracking and finding the ball late and still going up to make the pick and whatnot. He's a very good tackler, so that's really nice. He has not delivered, and this is my basic issue with the Starks pick, is he has not delivered with really great coverage metrics throughout his 3 years at Georgia. Now, he's been a starter at Georgia from day one, which is in itself amazing, but he's gave up 8.9 yards per target last year. Almost 100 quarterback rating, and his career is 8.7 and 93. It's just not a great body of work as a coverage safety. Against some good competition last year, particularly against Texas in their game, he really got taken to the woodshed. Eight passes his way, all complete for 136. So he's had some tough moments as a coverage guy. Most of the national pundits, and every single one is on the opposite side from me, I'll just say that, love Starks and say that it's a usage question, and if you put him in one position, you'll get the true Starks. And it seems a lot like the Brandon Stevens situation originally, I hope he's that player. Certainly hope he makes the Hall of Fame. To me, I liked Emenwori better at safety at that pick.
Do you think Emery is a plug-and-play guy, or is he competing for that spot? When you look at the offensive linemen, obviously taking a couple guys, one seems more like a project, but Emery Jones, what are your thoughts on him?
Probably 50-50 or a little bit less to start in year one. He could get there via injury, but he'll have to beat out Voorhees at guard. I don't see that happening. He's also a guy who could play right guard. I think that would be his more natural position, but Fa'alele is not moving. He really can't play anywhere else. So if you're going to keep Fa'alele, and I think they will, I think he played well enough at the end of the last year to keep the job. Then I think Emery Jones spends this year on the sideline. He is the first man up if they have a problem at tackle. So he'll go to right tackle, and then either that'll be to replace Rosengarten, or Rosengarten will move to left tackle to replace Stanley.
Ken McCusick joins us, filmstudybaltimore.com. I want to talk about the Alabama A&M kid, Carson Vinson, 6'7", 314. The only thing that we saw that he did negatively on in terms of the testing was only bench rep 14 times. Everything else I hear he was off the chart with.
Yeah, he's an odd physical specimen. Very, very tall, very lean, even for an offensive tackle at 6'7", 314. I mean, that's, you don't think of that as being thin, but it really is in his case. He's still a giant among boys on the tape you see of Alabama A&M because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of smaller people, not the biggest and the best at playing at that level. You know, it was the FCS and the Southwestern Athletic Conference that he was playing at. One thing that was not particularly impressive about his game was that he did pick up some penalties. One every 149 snaps would be okay if you were playing the SEC. Playing at Alabama A&M, it's really not. I think if you – a player like that, the first question I ask is why the hell didn't he get an NIL deal at least by year five of his game? And it's very strange, but obviously they probably did not like the functional strength. And I would say – He will not be activated at any point during 2025, and he might not be activated at any point in 2026. But ideally, they'll find out in 26 who he is as a player. So we'll see him a little bit in the preseason. That's all we'll get to see of him pretty much, you know, the next year or so.
But Ken, what's going on with our kicker? Kicking situation just got interesting.
Yeah, it did. I don't really know anything about Tyler Lupead that other people don't know. You've seen the practice video probably of him kicking a 65 and a 70 consecutive, I think, and then you've probably also heard that he had a 62-yard field goal, and that's about the extent of my knowledge. He made 84% of his college kicks, so that's not tremendously accurate. I think it'll be an interesting camp battle. The Ravens also signed another UDFA kicker. I don't know whether they signed him to a contract or a workout, but it's pretty – I would say that's a lot of handwriting on the wall, yeah. Given that if they brought two guys in. If they brought one guy in, sure, it's just competition. No big deal. We've done that five times before. It is their first draft pick ever they've used. And if you look at the position, I mean, I think they were probably – didn't know exactly where they would end up drafting Loop, but they got him in response to the Borgalis pick, which happened at 182. So they said, okay, the run on kickers is starting. We got to get our guy now.
What do you make of – so – again, before we get back to players, was there anybody that you wanted at a certain pick? Now, let's say you liked the player, whether it was the first pick, second pick, whatever, mm-hmm. that they didn't take? Was there a direction you wanted them to go?
I mean, the big one was the very first pick. I preferred him and Worry to Starks. So, I understand I'm in the minority, and I'll be out there buying a Starks jersey next year if he has a big rookie year.
That's okay. Delanie Walker was one of the guys. I don't know if you guys know this. He said he didn't think Shedeur Sanders would get drafted until the fifth round, and they all made fun of him. And now he's the one laughing. Yep. You know, I mean, it happens when you take, and I don't consider it a bold take of what you're saying. You just prefer one to the other.
Yep. Yeah, I'm a South Carolina guy. Yep. You know who I wanted?
Starks.
you and I talked about that. I thought Starks was better than Maury. I think he's good. I think he's outstanding safety. I just think Starks is better.
Yeah. Well, they liked it. They apparently liked the interview. He's very polished. I actually consider that a mark against him, the polish, because he has less upside at the NFL level. Emin Wari doesn't even know how to play the position yet and allowed a 37.1 passer rating last year. To me, that has a lot of upside still left.
We're giving out shovels at 8:30, but on the other side, and there's a guy at the end of the draft, Kim McCusick, that I saw in college. I don't know how he fell this far. Maybe you can shed some light on it to me. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. 8:17 in the a.m., Kim McCusick, filmstudybaltimore.com in studio. Ken, listen, man, I don't care how much football you think you know. When you're watching, you don't notice offensive linemen unless they're really bad or really good. And when watching LSU, Garrett Dillinger is a guy that I can remember. He's a guy that stood out to me. He jumped off the screen. And I look up, and after being a four-year player there, what, he started 30-something games there? He's drafted in the seventh round. I'm not saying, oh, this is a guy that fell from the second round. I thought maybe a mid-fourth, fifth-round pick. Why did he fall to the seventh round, and is this a guy that could eventually outplay his draft pick?
Absolutely. So it's the reason why he dropped, I guess, is fairly well known. He had an ankle injury, and he had to have a tightrope procedure done. For those who don't know, tightrope procedure, they put a cord to rebind the tibia and the fibula at the base so that the healing is more quicker and proper, better than with screws. So anyway, people obviously are concerned about that when there's resetting involved. And it's just a high ankle sprain, supposedly, at the time. But that's what they did. He tested at a pro day, not at the combine. And his testing was outstanding, included 30 bench reps, which you wouldn't figure to be affected. But he had great jumps. I mean, right there, that tells you that the ankle's probably okay. He's had some previous injuries, a grade 2 MCL sprain, a broken hand, which obviously is just an acute thing. But the MCL sprain could be a chronic thing. From the tape, I see a lot of real positive things. He's a very good combination blocker, releases on time. He's decisive in a level 2, no issues holding the back end. He's somewhat lungy, I would say, at the line of scrimmage a little bit in the run game, and he can get thrown forward by a push-pull move. He isn't a great athlete in terms of movement, but I think he can do what the Ravens need him to in terms of pulls, and he's a very good pass blocker.
That's good.
That's the side you really need him to do. 3 penalties in 2008 college snaps. You've heard me complain about Simpson and his penalty rate. Almost exactly 1/7 as often is he penalized as much as John Simpson was.
Jeez.
Hey, Ken, going around the division, you're reading how people were graded. The Browns are getting high marks. Mel Kiper gave him an A+. I mean, pretty consistently, everyone is raving about the Browns draft class. How do you feel about this?
Well, they drafted, I think, a couple of inside linebackers, which is they have a hard time beating those picks for value, meaning they get more value than where they drafted them. But they did, I think, they did a good job of trading out a number 2 and getting an enormous return for it, including a number 1 next year, which is more than they probably should get it. And it's a number 1 from the Jaguars, so it could be a really good number 1. So I think from that perspective, they did quite well. In terms of the individual picks, Mason Graham is a very safe bet. I think of the rest of the divisional teams, they clearly had the best draft. I'd probably take the Ravens over them, but I think of the rest of the teams, the Browns did well.
It's funny because I said this about the Ravens draft, and you can look at different outlets, scouts, people you respect in the industry. It seemed like every person had one player that the Ravens drafted as one of their favorites. And I want to get your thoughts on the corner, the linebacker, Buchanan, because there were a couple people that said this guy fits in perfectly for what the Ravens are trying to do. What do you see with him?
Yeah, I didn't have him in my top 10, and honestly, I'd done very little tape work on him, but then I watched it, of course, after he got picked. I liked him a lot more than I thought I would, and he does some things very well. In coverage, he's a pretty good player, 7.2 yards per target, a 53.8 career quarterback rating against, which is no problem with that. He understands more, and linebackers when they're just starting out in the NFL, one of the things that takes them a long time to learn is what's going on behind them in level two, level three gap, and that's where a lot of deep crosses and whatnot and big plays in the NFL happen. And that linebacker has to be able to drop deep. It has to be able to get in the way, get in the passing lanes, and try and affect some of those passes, even if he doesn't necessarily touch them. Just make them more difficult up and down throws for the quarterback. They had glaring needs at the time. They had, a defensive line had not been yet addressed in a very deep class, and it looked like they were going to miss out on a lot of the real value in the class. But I really like who Buchanan is. Good spy, rushed the passer fairly effectively. Does have some problems shedding blocks. He has kind of short arms, and he's had some problems with that at the college level. But a good pick, and I think he addresses a need to have a backup for Roquan and a potential guy who can move in the will spot.
Ken McCusick, FilmStudyBaltimore.com, joining us right now. Ken, when you think about Colorado receivers, you think Travis Hunter, and you should. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's phenomenal. He's the number 2 overall draft pick. However, there's another guy there, LaJonte Wester. 5'10", small guy, 4'4", 640. Is LaJonte drafted more to be a receiver or a punt returner? Because he was pretty good at that, averaging over 15 yards of return.
I think being a punt returner is going to give him the offensive opportunities that he would like to have at the NFL level. He won't get a ton of targets this year. I'd over and under him at maybe about 28 targets. Target and a half per game would be about right. But here's the thing. He'll be on the team because he's a punt returner, mm-hmm. and he'll be on the field because of the fresh legs need and the value the Ravens get out of him on gadget plays. And they'll use him down the field some, but really I'd like to reduce the gadget workload of Flowers because he's so much valuable, has so much value peeling off safeties. And the Ravens, I think more than in past years even, and they did it a lot last year, will be rotating in 5 guys a lot on individual plays. A fresh legs offense like the Saints used to have 12, 14 years ago.
One of the things that does impress me, though, 5'10", he had 8 out of 12
yep.
contested catches. That is impressive with his stature.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And he tracks the ball very well in the air. I've seen scouting reports that say he doesn't reach back for the ball well. I saw him on tape him doing exactly that. I thought he made Shadur look better. Presents himself very well when crossing the field. Anytime he's got a corner in trail coverage from one side of the field and he's going to the other, he gains a lot of separation because he doesn't have to sit in the chair. He can just stick his foot in the turf and go. It's very Flowers like. He doesn't have to decelerate and show what he's doing. But the other thing is, he presents himself very well to Shadur. He's always looking back for the football, and Shadur could see and throw it to him. And he was much more effective than Shadur's general receivers. Shadur threw it for 115 passer rating, and the passer rating throwing to Wester was 136.
Okay.
So, great year.
Ken, I was looking around the division at their draft picks. It seemed to me, and I could be wrong, they were gearing their draft class to combat. I still lead the Ravens a team to beat to combat the Ravens rushing game. Pittsburgh took two defensive tackles and linebacker. Cleveland took a defensive tackle in their first pick, as did the Steelers and the linebacker from UCLA. Cincinnati did the same, two linebackers and an edge rusher. Are they like gearing their teams to just overcome the Ravens?
Yeah, I think we've seen that now for several years with picks like JOK and even the Steelers going out and getting Patrick Queen. I thought they would think would be some kryptonite for Lamar. The Bengals have had linebackers that fit in that that class as well. For the Bengals specifically, just since you mentioned them, I really do not like the Shamar Stewart pick. That was a massive overdraft,
yep.
And that really makes their draft not look that good.
Hey, so as you start looking at, have you dove in any of the undrafted guys yet or looked at any of those things?
No, it's coming up. I'm doing it today. Yeah.
I didn't want to jump ahead of anything because I even heard good things about those guys. But I did want to get to the cornerback that I was alluding to before that people were talking about out of Western Michigan, Kone. What are your thoughts on him? And again, I've read people that really love this pick for the Ravens. And I don't know if it's a Ravens thing and people, if they take him, everybody just goes, oh, I love that pick for them. Or if he's really a fit here, but they did draft a couple of corners.
Yeah, the corner position reminds me of the 2018 wide receiver picks they made. Because I'm sure you'll remember right now. It's Jaleel Scott and the other guy who threw the ball in the pond, Jordan Lasley.
Oh, the kid out of UCLA. Yeah.
These two corners, I don't really love generally who they are. Now, they've been through a lot. Bilal Kone had played JUCO 2 years, Indiana State 2 years at Western Michigan. So I don't know whether he's 23 or 24. Can't find a good age on the guy. He certainly has been adequate as a tackler. He's had a lot of pass breakups in his career. He's gotten his hand on the football a lot, but he hasn't converted them into interceptions very often with only two. 9.5% is his conversion rate on those. The pick, honestly, because he's given up a lot of yards per target and he hasn't been particularly good, otherwise kind of reminds me a little bit of the Kayubu Kelly pick. And I hate to say that because it's like stamping it already. Love him for him to prove me wrong. But, he basically, I think one of Kone or Longer Beam will make the team and take JAD spot would be my guess.
Now, you say you're looking at the undrafted guys tonight?
Yeah, today.
So that doesn't mean we can get you tomorrow for a segment?
Sure.
It's just to talk about undrafted guys.
Absolutely.
All right, my man. Thanks a lot, Ken McKusick. See you tomorrow. 410-583-1057 is the number. Mike Borda joins us at 8:45, but on the other side, Ed Norris, giving out shovels.
Yeah, I'm giving to the Shadur Sanders excuse makers. There's a lot of evidence out there.
If you have a shovel, give us a call. Give us a text, 410-583-1057. Hit us up on Twitter, at BBMS. 105.7 The Fan, shovels next. Time to give out shovels. If you have a shovel, give us a call. Give us a text, 410-583-1057. Hit us up on Twitter, at BBMS. 105.7 The Fan. Ed Norris, who gets your shovel?
Shadur Sanders, excuse makers.
He's excuse makers, okay.
Yeah, the people are just, making it all, just defending him, throwing all kinds of other, reasons, racial reasons, this reason, his father. Apparently he had a very bad meeting with the Daboll of the Giants. Where he won't even, he dodged the question. If you look at this press clips out there, he was asked directly because it got out that he had a bad interview. He quizzed them on a package and he wasn't prepared, challenged them on it. Then he got crappy with the coach. It was a bad interview and Daboll won't address it publicly. Then there's the long time assistant coach. This is from Tom Pelissero. from the NFL Network. This is the quote. He says, "The worst formal interview I've ever been in my life. He's so entitled, takes unnecessary sack, never plays on time, horrible body language, blames teammates, but the biggest thing, he's not that good." So, I mean, this is just two examples. There's plenty. I mean, people saying it's the worst interview ever in private, you know, conversations. It's no big surprise. I mean, to me, no big surprise he fell to the fifth round.
See, what gets me about Dable, though, I don't like about Dable, come on out and say it, because we know how it works. When you tell a member of the media something and they repeat it, that means you gave them permission to repeat it. So if you're willing for it to be out, now you should come out and get behind it. Because if you didn't want that media member to say it, you know how many times somebody tells me something, they ask me not to repeat it? Mm-hmm. So if you didn't want him to repeat it, then you would have told him to. So now that you gave him permission to, come on out and say it.
Well, how do you know that he gave permission? It could have come from an assistant. Could have come from someone else. Dable just asked a question because it had leaked.
The only reason why this thing was repeated was because they gave permission to be repeated. I agree. The guy has had bad interviews. We all knew that. But at the same time, anyone put information out there, plant it, stand by it. That's all I'm saying. It's anonymous coaches and all that. Just say what you got to say. You got a shovel. You go.
Yeah, well, I'll do this real quick. My shovel goes to all the people on social media that are arguing about could 100 men defeat a single silverback gorilla. Of course 100 men could do it unarmed. But you'd have to get together to unify to attack it in a certain way. Because as soon as he rips the first bastard in half, I think some people are going to make business decisions and take off. But this is so funny that the internet gets caught into this all the time of these debates. And everyone's fighting over what would happen. A silverback gorilla can lift up to 1,800 pounds. So, like, if you're not uniform and everybody going in at the same time, again, he's just going to tear everybody up. But it absolutely can happen with 100 people.
See, I'd rather it go to the question, how many of us can outrun a silverback gorilla? I don't have to. I just have to outrun you.
See, that's
I'm not trying to fight. Come on, man. What kind of nonsense is that? Hey, guys.
It's a dumb question.
It's 20. How many people? 100 men, you said?
100.
Hey, I'm going to ask 99 other men, hey, man, go in with me. Let's fight this silverback gorilla. No, I'd rather have sex.
Saying it like in a gladiator's type setting.
Hang with my family.
Well, no, okay, but yes, obviously, Rob, but in a gladiator setting.
It's a waste of time.
It's a hypothetical question.
It's a waste of freaking time.
Well, not really. We're talking about it now. This is great content.
Goodness gracious. 100 people. Come on, man.
See, the thing is, like, I just watched some gorillas just doing gorilla-like things. And no, you don't want any of that smoke. But it's also like the old Bruce Lee movies. Why is everyone tacking at a singular? All of you run in and tackle this bastard, and he ain't doing that.
Well, you know what's interesting, too, is people forget their bite force is more than twice that of a lion.
Oh, yeah.
Twice of a lion. Yeah.
My shovel goes to NBA officials. After the Detroit Pistons' 94-93 loss to the New York Knicks in Game 4 of their playoff series, NBA officials publicly acknowledged that there was a missed foul call in the closing seconds of the game that might have changed the outcome. Now, hear the excuse from David Guthrie. During live play, it was judged that Josh Hart made a legal defensive play. After post-game review, we observed that Hart made body contact that was more than marginal to Hardaway Jr. More than marginal. Since when is contact described as less than marginal or more than marginal? That's not a discretionary call. Contact is contact. You know why? Because NBA officials, above all other officials, are afraid to make calls at the end of the game. I don't want to determine the end of the game. I don't want to decide the end of the game. Here's clear proof that you, in fact, decided the end of the game. Well, have you ever heard of marginal contact, Jeremy, in basketball? Contact is I'm shooting the ball and you made contact with me. You're messing up my shot, marginal or not marginal.
Yeah, I mean, but I've heard this from refs, too. It's like, oh, I don't think he caused you to change the shot. He didn't hit you hard enough to make you. And it's like,
that's because you'd be a little punk and you're afraid to make the call at the end of the game.
Did he hit me or not? It's like, come on.
See, that was a 3-point attempt. We're down one. I got 3 chances to hit 2 free throws to win this game. But I don't have that chance. You know why? Because you determine marginal or less than marginal. It's a joke, man. It's an absolute joke. Trippy in Baltimore. What's
Hello?
Up,
Trippy? Hey, what's up, man? I got a shovel.
All right.
I got a shovel for the Lakers fans. By the way, I'm a Lakers. I'm a Lakers fan, right? At the game one, all these Lakers fans kept saying Lakers at five. You know what? Lakers ready to take a dive at the five. Hello, I come to the ball, man.
Who said Lakers in five?
A lot of people were.
Chris in New Jersey. What's up, Chris?
What's up, Rob? Kamish? How y'all doing? Jeremy?
Good.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. My shovel goes out to the Ravens. And the reason it goes out to the Ravens is, overall, I like the Mike Green pick. But just be honest, don't tell me that you guys have a zero tolerance policy and all this other stuff in the wake of Justin Tucker and then do the same damn thing with Mike Green.
I said the same thing, Chris. I love the pick. But at the same time, it's kind of odd that you got this thing going on with your kicker and now you draft someone.
Now, Rob, I sent you an article from The Athletic. I don't know if you had time to read it. But he had two accusations, once in high school and then in college twice. And then the Ravens pick him up. Now, I get it. I believe in innocence until proven guilty, but come on, man. Just be honest and say, you know what? Unless people are in handcuffs, we'll take them.
And what gets me is they say that we did our due diligence. Well, if you did your due diligence, how does the top 20 pick drop to the bottom of the second round? You found something to justify not draft them in the first round. Not only you, but 31 other teams. Sean in Baltimore. What's up, Sean?
What's up? What's up, Rob? What's up, fellas? Good morning. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday,
man. Hey, Rob, I wanted to piggyback off of what you said, man. We got to give them a double show. And the reason I say that, they smack us in the face with the next game and get LeBron a foul on a review talking about marginal foul. Get out of here, man. Y'all have a nice one, fellas.
Yeah, well, I just want to, man. NBA officials, man, I'm telling you, dude, they are the absolute worst. Daily Line with Jeremy Kahn at 9:30. The only reason why you don't know it because a lot of people don't watch the NBA. If you actually watch the NBA, you would appreciate NFL officials. On the other side, we're talking baseball MLB style with Mike Bordick on The Fan. Thoughts on the draft for the Ravens and the rest of the league at 9 o'clock. But right now, we're talking with the man from Be More Baseball Podcast, former Oriole, Mike Bordick. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Rob. How are you? That's a great introduction, man. Thanks so much for starting with that.
No problem.
I love it.
No problem.
I love
Listen, man, you've been a part of good teams. You've been a part of some bad teams. This Baltimore Orioles team is a team that's won 192 games over the past two seasons. Now they're 10-17. We know about the injuries. I said a little bit earlier, you know, you got Tomo pitching well. The kid, Cade Povich, not pitching bad. You throw in Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez, and Zach Eflin. You have a good rotation. Three of those guys are injured. Is that a big part of the reason the Orioles are off to such a slow start because of injuries?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it would be nice to start with, their best five. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. And it seems like, obviously, this is going to be more commonplace in baseball because every team has to make these adjustments. I mean, you know, even the Dodgers, you look at them last year, they lost, you know, to win the World Series, they lost their whole rotation and then had so much depth that they were still able to dominate. So that's the key, and I think the Orioles tried to address that. Unfortunately, just still not enough. So, you know, they got to take what's given right now, and hopefully guys can make the adjustments and be a little bit more competitive. And that's really on all sides of the ball.
Well, the pitching staff's been decimated. But
yeah,
we have four guys in the lineup yesterday who weren't even batting 200. Granted, not everyday players, but they're not scoring. They're not getting on base that often. And when they do, they're not knocking people in. It's just, what's going on with the hitting? It's pretty much throughout. I mean, other than Cedric and O'Hearn, pretty much throughout the line. And Urias, I mean, the vets are hitting. But our star young players are not hitting.
Yeah, well, I think you just said it right there. They're young players. And they're high picks that were kind of pushed through, you know, the minor leagues into the big leagues. And you know, a lot of expectations, and they've all had success up there, right? It's just a matter of this learning curve, how they're able to adjust. There are a lot of, I think, facets that go into, obviously, hitting. And confidence is the most important thing. And when you're a young guy, you just naturally go through the ups and downs. You haven't experienced it all yet. And until you go through it and are just able to say, oh, what the heck, you know, just flush it right out the window, which is a common kind of phrase in the major leagues, until you can literally do that and move on to the next at bat and grow from a mistake, you're going to be in trouble, because this young team now, when you see them fall behind, you literally see them fall behind. All the young guys are, it looks like a little league team. And the other team, if you're a major league team playing against the Orioles and you see all of a sudden the head go down or somebody throw their bat or the frustration on the base pass, oh my gosh, in the opposing dugout, all they say, we got them. We got them now, they're done. And that's the way the Orioles look right now. So finding a way to have sustainable confidence, which typically builds off your preparation, and then you just throw it out there and you see what you got. I know these guys work super hard, but I'm telling, it's just experience, man. And these young guys have to go through this. Hopefully they can pull themselves out, because there's an old saying, man, it's easy to get to the big leagues. It's hard to stay there. You have got to bust and work so hard and come up with the right mindset to have success. And that doesn't go for just baseball. That's any sport. You're going to get knocked down and you got to deal with the adversity, or you're not going to be there to deal with it.
Hey, Mike, I know everybody's saying all the right things. It's hard to lose a season in April and you got plenty of time to bounce back and all that. Can they save this season, in your opinion?
Well, absolutely, but somebody better step up. Listen, this is a leadership issue, and I'm not knocking Brandon Hyde. I'm not knocking Mike Elias. This has to come from the clubhouse. Players have to take responsibility for themselves and their own actions. If they're looking for upper leadership to lead them in the right direction and hope there's a major trade happening that's going to put them over the top, they are far mistaken right here. This has to come from the locker room, period. That's how all teams win, from within the clubhouse. There are leaders in there, and somebody has to emerge. Listen, I called Adley out last week with Tim Barbalay on the Baltimore Baseball Tonight show. He's the guy that turned the whole organization around. He was the face of the franchise coming through the minor leagues, and the day he set foot in the big leagues, it changed the whole organization. Yeah, he's the guy that's got to get in front of the camera and, you know, get outside of his comfort zone and own up to this, and they will follow him. I wholeheartedly believe that. But somebody's got to get in his ear, and because nobody else is doing it right now, at least from what I see.
There he is, Mike Bordick. Mike, tell us all about Be More Baseball Podcast.
Yeah, listen, man, we are going over all kinds of stuff this week. We got an awesome interview with Mark Fine. I don't even think he's been interviewed, and he's one of the top dogs now with the Orioles in marketing.
Yep.
So we're going to be able to talk to him this week. We're also going to talk about the body language of the Orioles and the young players and how they really need to adjust that, right, and kind of change that mindset a little bit and so they can start believing in themselves. So, yeah, check out the Be More Baseball Podcast, Be More Ball Pod. .com on YouTube. I always screw that up, but you got to check it out. Mike Bordick, Jerry Coleman. We're doing some good stuff. So thanks a lot, guys.
Mike, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate your time.
All right. See you.
Mike, 410-583-1057. That's the number. I agree with Mike wholeheartedly. This comes from the locker room. That's where leadership comes from. I'm not quite sure that's Adley Rutschman, though. Remember, we said this, we had this conversation last year. People thought Adley Rutschman's the next leader. I didn't think so then. I'm not sure he is now. I think he's one of those guys that leads by, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do, but I don't think he's a guy that says, get behind me, I'm a lead. I don't know if he's wired that way. Prank call to Shedeur Sanders during the draft. We'll talk about that and where it came from. Interesting story of where this originated. I'm not talking about the person that actually made the call, where he got the information from. We'll do that at 9:15. But on the other side, thoughts on the draft for the Ravens and the rest of the league right here on The Fan.